Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Once Upon a Time at the Oscars. Hey everyone, and welcome to Once Upon a Time at the Oscars, the show that takes you through every Best Picture nominee from 1927 to today. I'm your host, Kyle.
And I'm your co-host, Ryan.
And this is a monumental episode for us. It is the first ceremony episode of the podcast covering the films of the 1929 Academy Awards.
Which also happened to be the first ever Academy Awards.
Strange coincidence.
Wow, look at that.
I'm pretty excited. This to me is a big deal, because if you've listened to every episode so far, you know that I did this show originally with my ex-partner. So this is the first full run of an Academy year with you, Ryan.
Yeah, your new partner.
Yeah, my new partner.
And
ooh la la.
ooh, it's a scandal. Yeah, and you know, I think going from the beginning to current is going to do a lot of great, because a very big part of this was the conversational aspect, but the historical aspect as well, and seeing how things have changed since the beginning. Hopping around, it's harder to get an idea of like the domino effect of so many things.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested in seeing how this plays out, and it's just cool to kind of start at the top, bottom, however you prefer, but to start at the beginning.
Yeah, it's going to be cool to get a. I mean, this is stuff we've already said a million times. It's going to be cool to get a perspective of someone different, you know, and someone with a different outlook on the movies and all of that. And it is. It's been great so far talking with you. We've said a few times now that, you know, these aren't movies that you normally would have sought out on your own.
Correct.
So that's been a lot of fun, specifically. I love going through these movies. I've done it before, though. So my thrill for this first year has been watching you grow up.
Oh,
this month and experience these movies for the first time.
Yeah, you know, we've been all over the place. We've seen people working in sewers going to war. We've seen mobsters face their ultimate end, their own hubris. We've seen love triangles quite literally created.
Yes.
On film. So it's been nice to kind of grow and, you know, be a part of this, and I'm excited for the years to come. You know, the thing that I'm interested in is that when we talk about Academy Awards, we talked about reviewing the ceremony itself. And as someone who watches, I mean, to be quite honest with you, almost literally awards every award ceremony that's available to me. They're like, hey, the Emmys are on. I'm like, I'm watching. Mm. Tonys, I'm probably going to watch. I don't know anything about what's going on Broadway, but I'm probably going to watch the Tonys. With Oscars, that's just, you know, I think I checked my Instagram, and when the Oscars happened this year, I went live on Twitch and talked about it, and I said in my Instagram post that it's the most important night of the year, or the best night of the year. Mm. And that's kind of what Oscars are for me. It's like, it really is a moment to celebrate the movies, the past year in movies, and celebrate the industry. And I'm looking forward to the time where you and I can actually quite literally watch these ceremonies, right?
Right.
But taking place in 1929, not really possible to go and review the actual footage of this. So we're flying a little blind with the first couple years of this, but I'm excited to get to the point where we can actually literally watch the ceremony.
Yeah, at this point, all there is photos.
Yeah.
They were taking pictures, obviously, at the ceremony, a very short ceremony. It was mostly just a dinner. The actual winners and everything had been announced
Well before.
So everybody showed up, they ate their lovely little dinners, and they said, all right, here's your Oscar. Thanks, hang out and go home.
An interesting detail, though, is that the Oscar that we know and love, traditionally gold, right?
Right.
The golden statue. 1929, bronze.
Ooh.
So interesting that they would be a bronze depiction for that award, and we won't get too far ahead of ourselves, but I'm looking forward to the evolution to when they actually upgraded to gold and when that was.
Yeah. And, you know, that's funny because there hasn't been that many changes made to the original statue. So being able to talk about that, I didn't know the first one was bronze.
Yeah, I mean, it was designed by Cedric Gibbons. I know George Stanley sculpted it as well. But so those are the original designs of it. So I wonder at one point, I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure why they did bronze to begin with. Maybe gold shortage or something. But it would make sense that they would want to do gold because that is the quite literal best, like the achievement.
Right.
So the highest you can get is gold. So surprising that they did bronze, but that was in fact the statue design for the 1929s.
Nice. Have you heard the story of where the Oscar got its name?
No.
There was apparently a woman that worked at a newspaper that saw the statue and said, "Oh, that looks like my Uncle Oscar." And they were like, "My God, I love that." Yeah. And I think that's been disputed quite a number of times, so it's always this wishy-washy of where the actual name came from.
You know what that feels like? That feels like your friend who had a girlfriend in high school, but she went to a different school.
Or she went to Canada. Yeah. Or my uncle works for Nintendo kind of thing.
Yeah. Wow, you know what's crazy? I think everyone thought that was me. My uncle did work for Microsoft at the time when Xbox came out.
Mm.
So I think everyone was like, "Okay, dude. Your uncle works for Xbox." Because Halo had just come out.
Right.
So I think everyone was like, "Oh, you get to play Halo early? Cool." I did. My uncle was... Yeah, anyways, not important. Point is, that story of the Oscar, like my Uncle Oscar, that sounds a little pick-me.
Very much like your Uncle Xbox story.
Well, that was real.
Right. Sure.
Don't tell anyone that I'm crossing my fingers right now. But yes, very similar situation to my Canadian girlfriend in high school.
You had one of those too?
I think we all had one.
I never had a Canadian girlfriend.
You never did?
Why didn't I invent a Canadian girlfriend?
Next time that you go through high school, I would suggest when you're like freshman, maybe sophomore year, when you establish yourself a little bit, Canadian girlfriend.
I'm going to say this and not as a way to like be like, "Guys, look what I can pull off."
I've already dropped my uncle working at Microsoft, so you're good.
Fair, but this is a real story, so...
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Uh-huh.
So, working background acting in the past, the number of times I've been cast as a high schooler is pretty insane. So, I have had opportunities to create this Canadian girlfriend, and I'm kind of bummed out now that I think, especially within this past year, I've definitely passed the high school potential.
I don't know, man. I think you could still do it.
I've had times where I've shown up on set, and the PAs have been like, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, "I don't know, man. Talk to casting. I showed up because it's a paycheck. Give me a break."
I mean, so here's the thing. Smashing Machine came out recently, and Dwayne Johnson plays, he's 52. And he's in his 50s. Don't call me on 52. He's in his 50s. And he's playing Mark Kerr, who at the time is 25. So if he can cut his lifespan in half convincingly, I think you can too.
If they were giving me Dwayne Johnson makeup. But I mean, you know, I'm a backgrounder.
Are these local shoots not doing the safty?
They're kind of, you know, painting the dark, aged sadness out of my eyes, and that's it. They're like, "Yeah, that's fine."
He's going to need a lot of makeup to get that sadness out of my eyes.
You and me both, man.
That's not living in 2025.
Exactly.
My uncle worked at Microsoft. So, it's interesting because we talked about, like, you know, what we want to do for this episode, and with it being 15 minutes... It really does feel like a complete complete night and day difference of where we are now. Because now, it feels like when you tell the Academy, "Hey, you have 3 hours," they're like, "That's it.
Yeah.
That's all the time we have to do everything we want to do." It's crazy. Because back then, there's a lot less pomp and circumstance, right? And it was more, you know, again, it started as a union. Like, this was just a banquet, basically.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, they had announced the winners well before the actual ceremony. So there is no surprises. There is no drama. There is no need for multiple cameras on individuals to see faces of who is disappointed and who's excited. So it really was a different time. And what's interesting is that the broadcast itself is actually literally not even a thing because it wasn't broadcast.
At all.
At all. Radio, television, otherwise.
Yeah, which is so wild. But... I guess it makes sense. The whole idea of this banquet was to kind of bring some razzle-dazzle to the industry, to really make it this big, giant industry of celebrity and what's the word?
Notoriety?
Yeah.
Celebration?
Exactly. Showing that people were doing incredible things, because how else do you do that what better way than to award people?
Right. And, you know, it's, we say all this and it, you may be thinking like a very bare bones situation to where there's very few people in this room. It's the winners. Maybe the people who were nominated wouldn't even show up because they didn't win and they were told ahead of time. But this still was a room of 270 people.
Yeah.
Right. And that doesn't touch the thousands that are currently at the Oscar ceremony now. But it does represent a little bit closer to like what the Golden Globes would have, where it is just like a hotel banquet hall, basically. And you have roughly 300 people within this building. So still a decent size for the ceremony, just not broadcast.
And when you think about what that means for membership of the Academy, that's huge. This is a brand new organization.
Oh, yeah.
With the intention of, you know, being the organization for film in this country. And you have that many people for your first year. That's good news. Now, some of those were guests as well. You could buy a ticket for a guest for $5, which that's got to be a ton of money.
Can you imagine?
Really?
Be able to pay $5 to go to an Oscar ceremony?
It'd be pretty wild. I feel like for fun, if you host a Oscar party in the future, you should charge $5 at the door.
Oh, like an after party?
No, like if you
like
do
here.
Like if we do like a, you know, hey everybody, come watch the Oscars in my place, charge everybody $5.
I'd be so real with you. I've been hosting parties since like I was in my 20s. I mean, you know, you came to one of my parties when I was in my 20s. I've been hosting parties since then.
Yeah.
And I love hosting parties. Taylor loves cooking. We love coming with the ideas of what to make to like make it on theme. We love the whole bit of it. Knowing what it takes to go into like put into a party and host it and like buy the food and everything, I think charging $5 per head for a party that you're serving food at is pretty fair. I'm not going to do that. But like that sounds, don't quote me on that because in a year I might. But
times is hard.
Times is hard. But it. I think my friends all know that I just love community so much and being around people. They're like, I'm just going to show up and not pay you $5 and you're going to let me in. I'm like, you're right. You are correct about that.
That's fair. I mean, that's you're a kinder soul than Louis B. Mayer.
Hey, that's true. And speaking of Louis B. Mayer, let's get into some details. So specifically, this ceremony was held on May 16th of 1929. And this was held exactly where?
At the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel in Los Angeles, California.
Specifically, the Blossom Room.
Ooh.
Ooh. Like so it. This was able to hold about 270 individuals for the banquet itself. It did have a host, right? Something that's very popular with even current iterations of the Oscars. The host at the time was Douglas Fairbanks, who, what was the importance of Douglas and his role?
He was the president of the Academy of Motion Picture Art and Sciences, which is really interesting to me. Could you name the president of the Academy now?
Oh, God, no.
Isn't that wild?
Love the Academy, love what it stands for, love the work that it does. One night every year for me. And I recognize that the president generally comes out and gives a speech. And every time I'm like, I should remember their name, and I don't.
Yeah, and I think a big reason behind that one is because we're looking back historically.
Of course.
But also Douglas Fairbanks was a tremendous actor at the time. There were a couple films, I believe, that were nominated this year that starred him. I think Two Arabian Nights is a Douglas Fairbanks movie.
Oh, okay.
Don't quote me on that.
I won't.
Cool. Thanks. But I still think it's really cool to have the president host the show.
Absolutely.
Fairbanks being who he was, I think, makes that possible.
Right.
I'm sure the president now is probably a producer who does a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff.
Do you know if in later iterations, and I don't even mean like, you know, now, I mean like, you know, 1930, 1935, was this a trend that existed for a while? Was the president hosting?
I imagine that the president was the host for at least until they started broadcasting it and they needed to guarantee that the host was kind of a showboater.
So while it was like more internal.
Yes.
Okay.
That's an assumption.
Well, we are podcasters after all.
Yeah, that's what we do. We assume. We don't fact check. Just kidding. Here's some more facts. So there were 12 categories this year, which seems like so little. Compared to what it is now. I think there's 22 or so categories now, 23.
Yeah, and I think it speaks a lot to, you know, the way that we celebrate spectacle that we have since added 10 awards or so to this ceremony and somehow still are making it from 15 minutes to 3 hours.
Yeah. Man, isn't that crazy? Imagine telling Adrian Brody the show is 15 minutes long. You'd be like, well, that's half my speech.
So we're going to open on my acceptance.
And close.
Yeah.
It's wild. But, you know.
I think contractually in his writer, it says that when he wins an Oscar, his speech has to contractually be 1/10 the runtime of the movie he's accepting it for. So to be fair, he is expecting that level of time.
That's true. And I clearly he's expecting to win as well. So,
you know what? Controversial opinion. I guess we're jumping ahead 90 years or so. I do think he deserved that win for The Brutalist.
Oh, I'm not saying he didn't.
Yeah.
I think that he knows he deserved it.
Yeah.
And that's when the things get a little like, that's take true. It easy. Take it easy, bud.
Yeah. I think somewhere between the Kieran Culkins and the Adrian Brody is like a perfectly humble like
speech yes.
that can be given.
Yes.
So I'm with you on that.
Yeah. And between the two, there's about a 20-minute Oscar speech.
Don't you love, there's a, I can't remember if it was Hard Times or another website, a mock website that said, unfortunately, the worst person you know just made a great point. I think that's a similar situation.
Yeah.
Where you're like, dang, he did do the best role or the best job in that role, didn't he? In Brutalist.
Yeah. Man, I like that movie, but after that, I wish he didn't win. If I'm being real.
No, it's a great movie. And honestly, it was tough because the length, the pacing of it is difficult to recommend.
You talking about the movie or his speech?
I think both.
Okay.
Pacing is a very big part of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But 1929.
Yeah, let's get back to that. Sorry. 12 categories. So I'm going to run through them here. You had, obviously, Best Picture, or what they called it back then, Outstanding Picture. Best Actor, Best Actress, Directing. Those are ones that still exist today and are part of the Big Five. You had Art Direction, Cinematography, Engineering Effects. Unique and Artistic Picture, which is the probably the most controversial thing, I think, that has survived from this Academy season. We'll talk more about that in a second.
Okay.
You had writing, and then you had some special awards handed out. So there's not a whole lot here that seems strange, new, or different. Engineering effects, we talked a little bit last week about Wings and how that took home that prize. That's not something that really exists now. It's kind of a culmination of different things like sound, best production design. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think engineering kind of split off into things like
sure.
that, sound and production design and everything. And then unique artist and picture. Do you want to talk about that now?
With the unique artist and picture? Yeah. I mean, yeah. So it's interesting because this is kind of a ceremony of splits, right? Like we talk about best picture now, and back then it was Outstanding Picture, and what was the second?
Unique and Artistic Picture.
So it's interesting because I think that if there's a time where it's needed, I think now. Like 2025 would be a great time for those. Because there's movies that just feel like, yeah, okay, this is technically the best picture. However,
mm-hmm.
we need to, and it should by no means be seen as a participation trophy, but we need to be celebrating the people who are taking these swings and doing these very artistic choices that otherwise maybe we're congratulating one that are more timely.
Yeah.
Or speak more to our time, which I guess is timely. But at the same time, you have a winner for best actor for two movies. So you're kind of like, you're seeing a split in multiple areas.
Right.
So it's strange to me. Do you want to talk more about the Outstanding Picture and that split before we talk about the individual wins?
Yeah, just for a second.
Okay.
I did go through and I watched the three movies that were nominated for Unique and Artistic Picture.
Right.
You had Chang, which was kind of a documentary of a tribe in the jungles of Africa.
Okay.
You had The Crowd, which was the story of a gentleman who believed that he was destined for big things, and then he kind of just has a very standard life. And then you had Sunrise, which also starred Best Actress winner Janet Gaynor. And that's definitely the best of those three. If I had to choose one of those to watch, I would say Sunrise. It's fantastic. A man is married, and he ends up falling in love with another woman who says, hey, just go get rid of your wife. Kill her. Easy. And then we can be together.
Yeah.
He goes to do it. He decides not to. And then the rest of the movie is basically him trying to make it up to her. And it sounds kind of like
his wife that he didn't kill?
Yes.
Okay.
Kind of sounds like a cheesy premise. Like a, wow, really? This is what we're watching?
Honestly, it sounds kind of Woody Allen-esque in the sense that like the second half is like him
yeah.
apologizing for something he didn't do.
Yes.
Imagine.
Yeah, if only life imitated art. It's a really good movie. It's shot really well. I think if you can get past kind of the like, wow, really, girl, run. What are you doing? If you can get past that, the story itself is pretty poetic.
Interesting.
I think that if you were to take those three films and then the three films nominated for Outstanding Picture, I think that Wings still would have been the winner.
Sure.
So while I do feel like at times it's weird that the Academy doesn't look at Sunrise, which won for Unique and Artistic Picture, and give it credit where credit is due, I still think Wings takes the cake just because it is such a massive production.
We talked about it on our Wings episode, but I think that it just checks all the boxes that you look for.
Yes.
Whereas other movies are checking individual boxes, but not quite all of them. Mm-hmm. So not having seen those other three that you mentioned, I can't say that they don't check the box, but I am hard-pressed to think of a movie that would come out and not be elevated beyond the artistic design or artistic award that could top Wings.
Right. I can't imagine any film watcher in the 20s to sit down for any of these movies, sit through Wings and not be like, wow, I've never seen anything like this before in my life. Yeah,
definitely. And it's funny because I think even when you mention like an artistry award or anything with artistry in the title, to think that Wings isn't up for that when like it's inventing stereotypes, plot points, and also just like film techniques.
Yeah.
Of like specific shots. It's kind of unreal.
Yeah.
I think. But I mean, it makes sense that it would join the, not to say one's higher than the other, but the upper echelon of that list. So it makes sense it would be in the for a fittingly named Outstanding Picture.
Yeah, I think as an industry, Wings contributed more to the industry itself.
Totally.
Than the artistic. I do like the idea of adding an artistic category in today's Oscars, like you were talking about, because I think that would open the door for your strange, like, A24 films. Granted, I'm sure the more mainstream entries would still be the ones that were picked for that category.
Yeah, and you know, I think that it just kind of, I think it would still be very much the upper elite when it comes to filmmaking, but you would see your Terrence Malick's make more of an appearance.
Mm.
You would see more of your Jonathan Glazer's, which isn't fair to say because I know he just won for Zone of Interest a couple of years ago, but you would see your directors who take more of an artistic swing and aren't as prevalent in like the mainstream name.
Yeah.
One thing I want to make sure we mention before we get too much into the awards is that there were like special awards that were given out at the Oscars specifically. And one thing that I thought was interesting is on top of recognizing Charlie Chaplin for his work on The Circus, they actually recognized a studio, Warner Brothers specifically, because at the time, 1929, they had just released the first feature-length talking picture, which was The Jazz Singer. So it seems kind of like a, you know, hey, congratulations, like a good for you thing. But at the time, it really was monumental because it was the first picture that featured talking.
Right.
They were able to actually like utilize this technology. So the same sense that, I don't mean to compare these, but like Avatar being nominated for Best Picture, that seems like a really similar thing where it's like, well, look at what you're able to do and look at how you take motion capture and put that into camera. That is a similar step to make from this because it just wasn't something you thought was possible before with technical achievement. So it's amazing that they did this, but it's also funny to think that the first ever Academy Awards ceremony where they are celebrating movies how they are, they're also celebrating the next step.
Right.
It is that quick that it's happening.
Yeah. It's always funny to me too that the Academy Awards line up with the dawn of the talkies.
Yeah.
You have this one year, the first year, where it is strictly silent films. And then the next year, that's gone. You're doing talking pictures. You're moving on into what I guess you could consider like modern film.
Yeah, I would.
If the basis of that is just, oh, there's sound. There's picture, there's sound. It's movies. The way I like to look at The Jazz Singer as well is it got that technical achievement and being like, congrats, guys. Like, this is huge. This is a big deal. You're disqualified from winning any Oscars because that would be unfair. That's my favorite element of that.
Yeah, it does. It does feel very much like you guys did easily the best job of any of us. But why don't you go sit down?
Yeah, let everyone else play.
Yeah.
have you ever seen The Jazz Singer?
I think I did a long time ago in college, but I don't remember much of it.
Okay, I actually have not seen it yet.
Oh,
that's a really big blind spot for me. As someone that's spent so much time now in like this era. Not to say that I've seen all the movies. We'll go over some other movies that weren't recognized this year, but definitely should be in a little bit. But yeah, I got to sit down and watch The Jazz Singer. You mentioned Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Charlie Chaplin in general?
I told you off mic that yesterday I went to, I guess I didn't tell you this part, but I love to go to McKay in Chattanooga.
Yes.
I'm actually wearing my Physical Media Forever hoodie right now. So I'm a very big collector of physical media. And I'm not quite at the level where I'm buying, like, you know, $100 box sets and all that. I will when I really like it. But I'm also just buying the titles that I'm either extremely interested in or I want to, like, have a historical, you know, memory of it. You pointed out that I got All Quiet on the Western Front on Blu-ray. I just picked up Little Caesar from 1930. So it's fun to watch these movies and find them. And while I was doing that, I did pick up and see a couple Charlie Chaplin Criterion collections. You know, I have Fool's Gold in my house, or Gold Rush.
Gold Rush.
Gold Rush, thank you. I was thinking of the classic, amazing A-plus Matthew McConaughey, Kate Hudson rom-com from 2000.
Yes.
Movie's garbage. So I was thinking of Gold Rush, but I have City of Lights at home. They had City Lights there as well. They had Modern Times on Criterion, which I didn't end up picking up. But I did pick up Limelight, which was a Charlie Chaplin movie. But here's the shocker, from 1952. So maybe 56, but it was in the 1950s. So it was later Chaplin. Where I stand on Chaplin is I think that, how do I want to put that? I really, really like the idea of a vaudevillian performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's at its core what Charlie Chaplin can do. Because Charlie Chaplin was at a time where the level of connection that you had with people was not based on what they heard, but what they see and what they feel. And that was a very spirited, every performance of his was very spirited because it had to be a very physical. So I think we talk about, you know, our Buster Keatons, and then later on in life, your Chris Farleys, and you talk about a very physical performer. And, you know, Buster Keaton has a little bit more in line with Charlie Chaplin here, but you were just limited in what you could do. So I think I hold Charlie Chaplin in a pretty high regard. I say that while also recognizing that I have almost zero historical understanding of, like, any meaning behind him or, like, what he went through. But just as achievements in film, I think it's kind of unfair to give him anything other than top props
for
the work that he did. And I think that's why it was important for me to grab the Criterion releases that I found of him, because I want to be more informed. And I have a feeling I'm going to be on the more on his side than against
when
I watch those.
Yeah, historically, Charlie Chaplin has he was kind of shunned, not just by the Academy, but by the industry itself.
Interesting.
Yeah, he was pretty much blacklisted at a time, and he left the country, and he didn't come back until, I believe, the 60s.
Wow.
So there's a lot of history between him and the Academy and the industry itself. I have never seen a Charlie Chaplin movie that I didn't at least love. Like, I don't think they're going to change your life in the, oh, that's one of the greatest movies ever told. But I always sit down and I have the exact same reaction where I'm just smiling, laughing, having a great time every single time. And I think that people like Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, like you mentioned, and Harold Lloyd, who also had a movie out this year, that vaudevillian comedic role and style, I think that that is a huge reason the film industry as a whole was as successful as it was in these early days.
Right.
More so than things like Wings and your romance and all of that. I think these are really easily digestible movies and characters that Chaplin and Keaton and Lloyd all created. And that's what brought people to the movies and turned it in from just another form of media into the largest media empire of all time. So between the two special awards for Warner Brothers and The Jazz Singer and then Charlie Chaplin, it's like, hey, thanks for laying the groundwork for literally everything to come. While The Jazz Singer Award is, hey, you did something first.
Yep.
Many more will do it better. I don't think anyone has ever done it better than Charlie Chaplin.
No, and it's funny that you say it like that, because it really is an almost changing of the guard, passing of the torch type situation of recognizing where we've been, but recognizing where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it does feel a little bit like a burial, like a funeral of like, oh, thank you for the work that you did, but not are going to continue to do.
Right.
Charlie Chaplin, because the focus is more on talkies. And you know, there's some controversy around it, but I always loved the artist. when that came out in the 2010s. And because it just had this very funny concept to me that was very real for Charlie Chaplin, where it was, I am this amazing spectacle of a person where people are saying, I'm going to go see that person's movie, right? Wings is amazing, but at no point, maybe with the exception of Clara Bow, is someone saying, I'm going to go see that person's movie. Right. I'm going to go see that ensemble, right? This cooperative effort of a movie. Charlie Chaplin was the person, right? And that's very much what the artist is based off of. But then when the talkies are introduced and you have this person who can start speaking, what if they don't have that level of performance? What if they can't commit to that?
Yeah.
What if they don't have an interesting voice? They've lost their luster because now there's this whole element that they don't specialize in that people are now looking for specifically. So it is almost, I mean, not to say this is the end of his career. He still had 30 years of content to come. I shouldn't say content, of work to contribute to. But it did feel a little bit of like, you know, I guess a changing of the guard, so to speak. And maybe they didn't know how much, but it certainly would dwindle a little bit of his popularity.
Yeah, yeah. In that sense, I like what you're saying. I feel like him getting that award was not only closure for Chaplin, but for an era of silence, really. Yeah, but we'll be seeing Charlie Chaplin when we cover The Great Dictator for 1940.
Yeah.
So, but really,
it's still plenty more great to come, but certainly challenges.
Yeah. Moving on from there, we were talking a little bit about how actors specifically were being nominated, not for a single film, but for their overall performances in multiple films this year.
Which, you know, it's interesting because in both cases, the two nominees would be Emil Jannings and Richard Barthelemous.
We'll go with that.
Sure. Is there a different way?
No. I mean, probably, but okay, not one that great. I know. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, sir. I wasn't sure if this thing was like me trying to say Sade, and you're like, okay.
No.
Sure, it's that.
Yeah.
I think it's Sade. So anyways,
Sade.
Emil Jannings and Richard Barthelemous are the two nominees. And between them, four movies were nominated for their performances. So here's my question to you. If you're... We won't give out spoilers just yet. We certainly can. If you're Richard or Emil, right, and you win, and you're given an award for both movies, do you think that you're tactically thinking, like, it's this one, but thank you for also giving it me for this one? Or do you think you're just taking the award for both?
No, I'm sure that you have the movie that you feel like, wait, yeah, I did some great
That's
work
the best
in that.
Work I did, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I imagine. And I think historically, depending on where you're looking, they'll call out one or the other for the movies they were in. I think with Emil Jannings, who won the Oscar that year, it's mostly for The Last Command. I've not seen any of these four movies that you mentioned.
Some insane names. You know, there's The Last Command and there's, I mean, you know what? Honestly, I think this third one is even kind of crazy. So Last Command, pretty normal. Here's the other two, the other three. Emil Jannings was nominated as well for The Way of All Flesh, which is kind of a crazy name for the 1929 ceremonies.
A little bit.
And then Richard Barthelemous was nominated for The Noose and The Patent Leather Kid.
Right.
So just kind of an insane group. When you think of Seventh Heaven, The Racket, and Wings, those three names just stand out as what were you thinking?
Yeah, yeah, I could see that.
They're a little outrageous.
A little bit, a little bit. I need to sit down and watch, especially Emil Jannings, his films, to see the first Best Actor winner.
Yeah, true.
He's an interesting guy. He's a German, and this obviously these were all silent films, so didn't matter what he sounded like. He had a very thick accent. Wasn't a big deal during the silent era.
Makes sense with the name of Mill.
Right. Once sound came into play, though, people weren't buying the accent. So he ended up going back overseas. He was the last German to ever win the Best Actor award. I'm sure there's reasons for that, especially throughout the 40s and 50s and all of that. The interesting thing about him, though, is he went overseas and ended up starring in propaganda films for the Nazi Party. Pretty controversial. I get it. He was looking for work. That's what they were filming in his home country.
Right.
But
tough beat.
Yeah, I'm just really curious to see what he was like in these movies. And since we didn't watch any of them, it's hard to really form an opinion.
Right.
That brings us to the movies that we did watch for Best Actress.
Well, so great point. And, you know, it's interesting because I know there's probably some people at home that are like, wow, being nominated for two movies, it's got to be like an award. It's not a record either, because our beautiful Janet Gaynor has actually bested that with 3. So there are 3 movies that Janet Gaynor was nominated for. And the 2 additional nominees were Louise Dresser and Gloria Swanson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Gloria Swanson was nominated for Sadie Thompson, and Louise Dresser was nominated for A Ship Comes In. Take note, these names are way more appropriate for an Oscar, 1929s especially, an Oscar-nominated list. Whoever named The Patent Leather Kid and The Way of All Flesh, just take note. But then Janet Gaynor is nominated for 3 movies. She's nominated for Sunrise, Street Angel, and inevitably what will get her the win, well, I mean, she won in general, but right. What I believe got her the win is Seventh Heaven.
Yeah. I mean, that alone, her being nominated for 3 movies over the other 2 single film, that says it all right there. You kind of knew she was going to win.
Do you kind of think, though, like, I mean, you're right. Like, everyone's going to know she wins, and they're all told ahead of time that you're going to win. But do you think when the nominations come out and you see that, like, 3 of the 4 other competitors that you have in your nominee list are one person, you kind of just accept defeat at that point, right? Like, just a numbers game level,
yeah,
you're winning.
Yeah.
And one of your films is nominated for Outstanding Picture, okay.
Right, you're kind of in.
Yeah.
I do like that this is the last year that you see this, and that it specifically focuses on one film in the future.
Completely agree. Because it feels at that point more achievement in the work that you did do rather than your achievement in this one picture, right?
Right.
So it's a numbers game.
Yeah, which is exactly what this looks like to me.
I mean, I do believe, though, you know, not to say that she doesn't deserve it, but Janet Gaynor, one of the highlights that I had mentioned in our episode covering Seventh Heaven is her performance specifically. So not a huge surprise that she would win for that. I still think that the work that I saw of the character work of Sylvia and Mary was a bit more engaging in Wings, but certainly I'm not going to knock Janet Gaynor's performance in that, especially if she's doing... Here's a question for you, actually, Kyle. Because we're covering... It's the 1929 ceremonies, but technically they're honoring the 1927 to the 1928.
Right.
Right? When you mentioned the work and achievement that you've done in films, does that feel like... I understand why they did it, but does that feel a little cheap? That they would recognize and then award it to someone who had like 3 movies in 2 years versus like all the work you put into like 1 movie for like 1 year?
Yeah, I would say so if the studio system didn't make it so that these people were working.
Right.
You know, they were all putting out multiple movies a year, sometimes an insane amount. But truly, I think they're calling out like the best performances.
Got it.
You know, so
not just who worked the most.
Yeah, yeah. I'd really be curious to see Gloria Swanson's performance because she comes back much later. She is very famously in Sunset Boulevard.
Wow. Oh,
I almost forgot the title. And that is such a unique role just overall because she's kind of playing who she is in a way and like what her story has led her to. I can't wait to talk about the movie. That's one of my favorite movies I've ever done for the podcast.
Stoked. Sounds great.
It's going to be awesome. Speaking of actors in general, do you think Janet Gaynor is like the star of the year?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, just with the movies that she's mentioned in, but also in the current time, I think so. I don't think that she's the name that people recognize the most over time.
Mm-hmm.
But at that specific moment, I think that's very easy to say.
Yeah. I think outside of like Charlie Chaplin, she's just the name of this year.
Yeah.
Because beyond that, the actors we've really kind of lingered on when it comes to performances is we talked about Clara Bow quite a bit. And I think that has to do more with just the history of who Clara Bow is. She was the it girl. And then Lewis Wolheim from The Racket, Nick Scarsi. But that was
my
more...
best performance of the year.
Yeah. You like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I thought... I remember we talked about in the Racket episode, that felt like the most scene-chewing performance of any of the movies that we watched.
I think he got to play the most.
Definitely.
And that's what made it so much fun.
Right.
But yeah, I'm thrilled that Janet Gaynor won. I think if you ever get the time, you should check out Sunrise. I think it's definitely worth revisiting in a way. For her performance alone, it's worth checking out.
Do you mind if we segue talking about Sunrise to talk a little bit about cinematography?
Sure.
Because cinematography, we know that, we'll go through the nominees here. For Sadie Thompson, George Barnes was nominated. He was also nominated for The Magic Flame, He was also nominated for The Devil Dancer. And then we have Carl Struss, who was nominated for Sunrise. We have Charles Rocher, who was also nominated for Sunrise. My question for you is this. Were they nominated individually, or did Sunrise win and they both received the award? Because it looks like, the way it's listed, that they were nominated separately.
Right. And I can't imagine that. It must have just went for that film.
Right.
And then they both were the cinematographers.
That's my thought.
But because this Academy year is so different from the structure that came later, I really don't know if there's any way to even verify how they went about doing it or if they had thought about it in that format, you know?
It is funny to me, and I do feel bad for George Barnes that he watched Janet Gaynor be nominated three times and win. He was like, yeah.
I got this.
I got this. And then, nope, just the one other movie
yeah.
is nominated. So do you stand by having watched Sunrise? You said you have.
I have.
Do you stand by cinematography?
It is
the award there.
It's a beautiful film. There is actually the moment where the husband thinks about killing his wife and he's taking her out on a boat. That's probably one of my favorite scenes from any of the films that I watched from this year.
Wow.
Because of the way it's shot. It's very horror film in a year where...
I mean, it would have to be with the subject matter at that time.
Right. And I think both of us are big horror fans.
Very much.
So anytime I get to see that stuff sprinkled into the Academy films, I get really excited.
I shared... I do a horror movie marathon every year. I like saying that. I've done it once, but like I'm going to continue. So I do that every year, and I was telling someone that I was thinking about doing Strangers on a Train. And they're like, well, that's not really horror, is it? And it's funny to look back and see these things that are very inspired by horror, because that shot and just that concept you're telling me about does sound very horrific and does sound like it's birthing the idea of like these very difficult things to think of. And Strangers on a Train at the time, I'm interested in your opinion, to me, especially with the Hitchcock brand on it, is very much horror, because it's a very similar subject of like, I'm going to make sure that you kill this person. I am going to blackmail you to have this done. And that is horror at the time. It's not quite as like, you know, dark. Well, it is dark, but it's not quite as fantastical or, you know, surreal as other stories that are going to come after it. But it is very much of the time what they imagine horror to be. So I love to look back and see things that maybe aren't horror, but do show Strangers on a Train is very much horror. But see the things that do kind of like birth the idea of horror a little bit, even as early as 1927 or 8.
Yeah, I have always had a really loose definition of what is a horror film specifically.
Yeah.
Horror doesn't have to be scary, doesn't have to be gory, violent, nothing. If characters are put in a position where they are afraid and I can put myself in their shoes and feel that fear, that's a horror movie to me.
Right.
So, I mean, all of Hitchcock is very easily horror. And yeah, anytime I see it sprinkled in things like Sunrise and those moments, I wouldn't call Sunrise a movie, a horror movie, but it does have elements of horror in it, and I'm all for it. I love that.
With that description, I think it's really easy for me to say that my favorite horror performance of, if I'm giving out that award in 1930, my favorite horror performance is of me watching the incorrect score for the Seventh Heaven production.
That is a highlight for me.
It really was just like, I feel like if I had any state secrets, I would have given them up. Because 2 hours in with the same 3-minute song looped, I was like, I'm ready to squeal. I'm ready to speak on everything I've ever known.
So funny.
That was my favorite horror performance of the year. So good to know with Sunrise. It was interesting that they both won, but I think you're right. They nominate the movie, and then there just happens to be two cinematographers. Interesting how they have it laid out on the actual official Academy website.
Right.
It's two separate winners. In the same sense that they do for Janet Gaynor with her three separate wins, but obviously for the one individual, this feels flipped. And the way that it should be, where we're nominating the movie and then the individual comes with it.
Right.
So I did skip over cinematography to talk about Sunrise, or sorry, skip to cinematography to talk about Sunrise, but art direction was something that won as well, obviously. And then keeping the tradition alive, we had William Cameron Menzies, actually nominated for two movies, The Dove and Tempest, which he did ultimately pull through and win for those two. You had, do you want to help me on Sunrise?
Rokas Gleese?
That sounds right. So Rokas Gliese for Sunrise, and then Harry Oliver was nominated for Seventh Heaven. Art direction, I think Seventh Heaven, I would have expected that a little bit,
mm-hmm.
just because I did very much like the depiction of the streets of France. I very much love that opening shot, too, of the sewers underneath the French streets.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of great direction in there. So I wouldn't have mind seeing Seventh Heaven take that one, but not as familiar with The Dove or Tempest.
No, I haven't seen either one of those films. William Cameron Menzies is a name that will come up very frequently as we go on. So I can only imagine how monumental the art decoration is in those movies, because it's wild that two films that were nominated for what you would say is the highest achievements with outstanding or unique and artistic mm-hmm. did not get the win over Menzies' two films.
It's interesting. Crazy yeah. how that goes.
I'm looking forward to checking those out.
Me too.
Seeing what they're like.
There's an interesting thing they do with directing, where, you know, I think we sometimes see maybe a little bit more, well, no, they do this in the Oscars, the idea of celebrating a drama and then celebrating like a comedy.
The Emmys, you mean?
They do that with, don't they do that in Oscars as well? Where they celebrate a comedic performance and then a drama performance?
Not modern Oscars.
I must just be really have Emmys on the brain. But yes, you're correct. They do separate that for the Emmys. So they did that for directing.
Mm.
And we'll start with comedy. Something that I just kind of thought of to keep in the vein of comedy. Between, right before we started recording, I was actually humming a song. And granted, we just, songs pop into our heads all the time. Who knows what it is? I started singing a song from Aladdin, Arabian Nights.
Mm.
And I kept thinking to myself, why on earth am I doing this? We have a blanket at our house that we just got. Very cool, by the way, at Sam's Club. They had blankets that you can get. And the cover of the blanket is very much the VHS cover, like the clamshell cover of that movie. However, the packaging of it is the VHS clamshell.
Ooh.
And it's large, a very large clamshell. And they even put the old school Disney, Walt Disney production sticker on like the crease to keep it together. So I'm like, okay, that's why I have it in my head. I actually realize now going through this, the reason that I had that in my head is because you were actually talking about a movie that did win for directing of comedy picture, which is Two Arabian Nights, but a Nights is with a K. And that's Lewis Milestone.
Yes.
Who was nominated. Ted Wilde also was nominated for Speedy, but Lewis did take the win for Two Arabian Nights.
Yes. One thing I want to clarify, I said I think Douglas Fairbanks was in Two Arabian Nights. He was not.
Oh,
so I just want to be clear before everyone comes after me for that. Interesting about this, though, Lewis Milestone won for Comedy Picture. We also know he directed The Racket.
He did.
So
interesting that that wasn't nominated as well if they just were going to give him the win.
Right, right. Lewis Milestone is great.
But it wasn't a comedy, so...
No, The Racket wasn't. Lewis Milestone's fantastic. I want to check out Two Arabian Nights because as much as I don't love the overall package of The Racket, the way that it was directed, I'm a huge fan of. And I can't wait for you to see All Quiet on the Western Front. That is also Milestone. Really just incredible director. So
we'll be talking about him a good bit
yeah.
that year, I imagine. Tune in next month.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, Speedy. That's a Harold Lloyd movie, mm-hmm. so it kind of has that Charlie Chaplin. I don't know if you're familiar with Harold Lloyd. This was my first...
Not as much.
Man, it's so good because he is the most normal character of the Keaton, Chaplin, all of that. So it seems just like a regular guy who gets put in the most bizarre situations. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Speedy.
Okay. Where'd you watch it?
Tubi. And it had good
not
music.
Not doing it.
It had good
so
music,
sorry,
I promise.
So sorry, not doing it. I have a rule now. It's not happening. Very excited that we're starting movies now that will have talkies or are talkies inherently. So I don't have to worry so much about that.
Yes.
But, well, I'm sure I'll find something. We'll see. So then directing and dramatic picture, the nominees there were King Vidor, great name for The Crowd, Herbert Brennan, Brennan for Sorrel and Son,
mm-hmm.
and then the winner, which was Frank Borzage for Seventh Heaven. Between the three here, again, I can't speak for The Crowd or Sorrel and Son, but Seventh Heaven makes sense.
Right.
I don't think it was the best directing across the board for me. I do think Wings had some better direction, but I do see what they're referring to with Seventh Heaven. And again, I really liked a lot of the shots in it. So pretty good. Pretty yeah. happy with that.
I think the biggest competition of the nominees here is King Vidor. That was nominated for Unique and Artistic Picture. Mm-hmm. It really is a solid movie, a great story. But with Seventh Heaven being nominated for Outstanding Picture, I think it's one of those, oh, yeah, of course it's going to go to that.
Good to know things don't change from 1930 to 2025.
Exactly.
So Engineering Effects is the next category that we have. We had Nugent Slaughter.
Oh.
Probably my next metal band, by the way.
Nice.
Nugent Slaughter. Ralph Hamiris. And we have who ended up winning was Roy Pomeroy. Actually, another great name. Some great names here. For Wings. What's interesting here, I want to get your opinion on this. Looking at the Academy website, I actually don't see a credit listed for Ralph or Nugent, but I do see a credit for Wings listed for Roy. Were they all for Wings, or were they just more limited or nominated for their contributions than one specific role?
Yeah, it looks like they were just being recognized for their contributions in general. From what I read, it does say Mr. Hamiris, Mr. Slaughter. Academy records indicate that Mr. Slaughter was most often mentioned in connection with the jazz singer.
Okay.
As far as Ralph Hamiris, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But that's the info I have.
God, I'm going to be thinking about Nugent Slaughter for like a couple days now. That's crazy. What I have listed next is Outstanding Picture, so we'll skip that because I believe that's where we'll spend the majority of the rest of our time. We'll talk about the Unique and Artistic Picture as well. So writing is where we're going to focus. Adaptation. Actually kind of interesting that they have title writing here. But to be honest, kind of an aspect that will go away after 1930.
Yeah. Yeah, and we did mention in our Seventh Heaven episode specifically how important title cards are for the flow and overall audience enjoyment, really, of these movies.
Very much. So with adaptation, you had Anthony Caldaway nominated for Glorious Betsy, another great band name. You had Alfred Cohn, who was nominated for The Jazz Singer. Mm-hmm. And you had Benjamin Glazer nominated for Seventh Heaven, and Benjamin Glazer ended up winning that category. With writing, how do you feel about that? Because it was an adaptation.
Right. It is one of those things where I haven't seen the other two movies, but Seventh Heaven was just, hey, this is your outstanding picture. Hey, Janet Gaynor was incredible. Hey, Frank Borzage. It's going to sweep, really, is what it boils down to.
Which is interesting because it did sweep comparatively, but it didn't take the top award.
Yes.
Which, again, interesting to see how things don't really change for 2025.
Right, right.
I'd like to see the balance of a sweep versus a split. Writing for original story, you had Lajos Bira for The Last Command and Ben Hecht for Underworld. Have never heard of Underworld, but that is what won here, Ben Hecht specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch that?
No, I'm unfamiliar, again, with both of these movies.
Oh, well, congratulations to Ben.
Yay, Ben.
Best of luck next time, Lajos. So writing with title writing specifically, this would be your title cards in between. George Marion Jr., Gerald Duffy was nominated for The Private Life of Helen of Troy, and your winner was Joseph Farnham. Any idea the credits that Joseph Farnham has?
No, I don't. I don't. And it's not listed on any of the sites that I saw.
Isn't that interesting? So weird. You would think that it would have the products, or, wow, gotta stop saying that, the titles that he worked for, and then the title writing specifically he provided for that.
Yeah.
But it's not listed on the Academy website.
No, no. And I imagine that they were just pumping out so many of these that it's just like, hey, these guys are doing tremendous work. Let's honor them.
Right. Might as well recognize them appropriately. So then that brings us to our big winners here. So Unique and Artistic Picture and Outstanding Picture are our two categories. So let's start with Unique and Artistic Picture because we did talk about Sunrise a good bit. Chang was for Paramount Famous Lasky. Have some questions about that. The Crowd was a Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer MGM production. And Sunrise was your winner, and this was Fox.
Mm-hmm.
So not having seen Chang or The Crowd, Sunrise does feel very much to you like the deserved winner there, correct?
100%. The Crowd would be the only competition it had in this category, but Sunrise really is. This is the movie, I think, from this year in general, that has transcended this year. In that big fat book, 1001 Movies to Watch Before You Die.
Right.
It's the only movie mentioned at the Academy Awards that is in that book. So do with that what you will.
Interesting.
It's really a great movie.
I'm surprised Wings wasn't on that list.
I know, right? Or The Jazz Singer's not in there
either.
Maybe
it was 1002.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. Nice. Just missed the cutoff.
Yeah, just by one.
Bummer.
And then you had your outstanding picture. This was your best picture category.
Yeah, this is why we're here.
It's why we're here. This was the very first one. So do you want to do this one?
No, you've been doing a great job.
Oh, well, thank you so much. So Fox put out Seventh Heaven. The Kado Company, put out The Racket. And Paramount Famous Lusky put out Wings. And as we've discussed, Wings was your winner for Outstanding Picture. So, Kyle, now that we've watched Seventh Heaven and The Racket and The Wings, and we've discussed them ad nauseum here, do you agree with the decision?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. I feel like we'll have conversations in the future where we are split between you and I, or we're split between the decision the Academy made, but I think this was the right call across the board.
Yeah. And really, I think easily, I mentioned earlier that if you were to combine the unique and artistic category with outstanding, it still takes the case. Even though Sunrise is mentioned in one book that I brought up and all this, Wings, it's the movie for everybody. It's the movie that I think advanced the industry as a whole the most. And yeah, I mean, it's just an obvious answer for me personally.
I think you're right. I mean, like it was definitely the most affecting movie. Mm. I enjoyed my time very much watching all three of these, mostly. Thank you, Tubi. But I think Wings was very easily the full performance. Everything I was looking for was in Wings. So it feels kind of poetic to say that they got it right the first time.
Yeah.
Right? Because this is an Academy company that is going to go down in history with so many people saying we got it wrong. And of course, it's all subjective, right? But people feeling like the Academy is disconnected from the things that matter, the stories that people like resonate with, or resonates a story with people, stories that resonate with people. But this, it's good to know that the foundation of this did start with a pretty big win of the movie that feels like, at least in hindsight, but probably at the time, the deserved winner.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there it is. That's 12 movies. It was a lot more than 12. 12 categories, 3 movies we watched. We mostly enjoyed all of them.
I think that we enjoyed the movies predominantly.
Hmm.
I think I didn't enjoy my experiences with them via a streaming service.
Yeah.
But I think that any issues we have with them, I think we still rated, you know, your lowest rating was on Seventh Heaven or
the Racket.
The Racket. Mm-hmm. And what was that? 2.5?
I think so, yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, still not terrible.
No, for an almost 100-year-old movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I just watched Megan the other day, and I gave it, I think, a 2.5. So,
do you think that Megan is as good as The Racket?
I think The Racket was shot better. So
sounds like we need to bump up The Racket a little bit.
That's true.
Maybe a 2.75.
Maybe. I'm glad that you're enjoying these movies, or at least enjoying the journey.
I'm enjoying the journey. Yeah, and you know, it's nice to have these movies under your belt, and I don't hate a movie unless it insults my intelligence, and I have not been insulted yet.
Perfect.
So I'm looking forward to the opportunity. I should say I imagine the audience is looking forward to the opportunity of when we find a movie here that does insult my intelligence, and we'll have a fun episode.
Yeah, those are always hard episodes, I feel. Because you gotta be like, guys, here's why this is important, and you should watch it, but don't watch it. It sucks. I hate it.
But also I hate it.
Yeah. It's going to be tough.
I'm looking forward to it.
At this point in the show, normally I think what we'll do is we'll go over any audience write-ins. Mm-hmm. If you guys have anything you want to say about the movies or the show in general, write into outaopodcast@gmail.com and we'll read them on the ceremony episodes. We didn't have anyone write in time for this particular episode. So that being said, write in and we'll take care of it next episode because we want this to be a reoccurring segment. What we do have in the meantime, we mentioned we're doing the double feature little game we're playing. We didn't do that in the first two episodes for The Racket and Seventh Heaven.
That's so true.
So I figure we can knock that out now and then, we'll go from there.
Pause. So I think I'm going to be, there's no way I'm topping my double feature suggestion for Wings.
So good.
I'll do my best. So with Seventh Heaven, part of me kind of wants to say Casablanca.
Okay.
I think that there is a similar element, not just in the relationship between the two leads, but I also think there's a bit of the effects of war, right? I think that the effects of war are handled a bit better in Casablanca than they are in Seventh Heaven. But the idea of what war can do, not just to our country, but also to us and to our relationships. Casablanca has a similar vibe in that, a stronger stance on it than Seventh Heaven has. But just the overall themes that I'm picking up from that, I would say Casablanca with Seventh Heaven.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So this might seem like an easy grab, but because of the moment we mentioned at the end of Seventh Heaven that Damien Chazelle used as inspiration for La La Land, I would say La La Land, to see how that kind of connects, at least thematically, the ending specifically.
That's interesting. And I almost feel like the ending is really, it's a very interesting talking point for Seventh Heaven. I feel like when it's paired with La La Land, that almost sways my opinion of what it is, what it's trying to depict, rather. Because with La La Land, famously, it's very much, we're going to show you what could have happened.
Yes.
But here's what did happen. And taking that stance in relation to Seventh Heaven kind of leads the witness to say, well, that's not what happened. That's what should have happened. So then it kind of like gives you a final answer of, it gives you a final answer of what's supposed to be an open-ended conversation. Right?
Right, yeah.
And to me, that's like a level of finality for something that's not supposed to have a finality. So it's interesting. It kind of challenges those ideas, which I think is an awesome idea for a double feature. Isn't just matching, but challenging these things as well. So kudos to you for that. What about The Racket?
I feel like The Racket's tough because it is such an early gangster film. Mm-hmm. You could pick any gangster film and say, okay, this works, same genre. Here's where it was, here's where it goes to. Mm-hmm. But to kind of fit the specific story of The Racket, I would probably say The Untouchables.
Sure. I mean, makes sense, right?
Yeah. It's really the closest in story directly, so it gives you a good opportunity to see the evolution, not only of the gangster film, but of that particular story in general and what it could ultimately evolve into.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great one. I'm going to swerve. I'm going to say The Naked Gun.
Oh, nice.
I think that The Racket is a misunderstood comedy. I think that there are elements of it and characters within it that are very much goofy and very vibrant in a movie that is not goofy or vibrant. And Naked Gun feels like a goofy and vibrant movie with characters that are very still.
Yes.
And cold. And that's part of the reason the satire. But it's very interesting to kind of see the comparison of those two.
Yeah.
So I would say Naked Gun, the original with Leslie Nielsen.
I love
fantastic
that.
Fantastic double feature concept.
That's so good.
With The Racket. And also, just when you think about the performance that the character of Nick Scarsi is given there, hard not to think of an over-the-top performance via a very subdued performance at the same time of Leslie Nielsen.
Right, yeah.
So that would be, I always love the idea, and that's why I suggested this, the idea of like, how do you pair this? Do you pair sweet with sweet? Do you pair sweet with sour? Do you go one-to-one, or do you swerve a little bit? And I think it depends on the title. Mm. Also depends on your mood and everything. But for me specifically, I think it's great to find these similarities, much like with Challengers and Wings, but then also kind of challenge the notation of it like you did with Seventh Heaven.
La La Land.
La La Land, thank you so much. And then in mine, in a similar fashion, Naked Gun with The Racket. So can't go wrong with those picks. That would be what we would suggest for a double feature. And honestly, let us know what you would double feature with. If you thought of a movie specifically when you're watching these best pictures, if you are watching the Outstanding Picture nominees with us, comment. Feel free to comment on our Instagram, email us. What's that email?
OUTAOpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, I've very much enjoyed doing this, man. Like it's the first year of us covering that, our first month together. How are you feeling with it?
I feel great. I'm so happy to be back. I love the discussions we've had, not only in the, hey, here's what we watched, blah, blah, blah. I think watching these movies separately adds an entirely fresh element for me. Because I don't know what you think of these movies until you sit down and tell me what you think.
Or text you, hey, I'm going to lose my mind if I hear the song one more time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of that. Support for the show so far has been great. I've gotten so many kind messages from people. We actually have a new backer, a returning backer on our Patreon. That's going to be Mari. Mari, thank you so much for your support. now and then. You've always been wonderful. I love this podcast. I love this journey. I love tackling these movies from this perspective and with this intention. And really, I have very much so enjoyed doing it with you. I think it's been fantastic.
Yeah, man. Same. And I appreciate the invite to join this with you full time. It's been really fun to go back and watch these. You know, I think it's not lost on you that it's laborious, right? Like, granted, we only had three movies this month, so it was a bit of an easy month to ease into it. But it is a laborious thing. But I think that when you have the passion that you and I do for movies and even history, like, it's easy to kind of commit to something like this and have those discussions. I agree with you. I think there's something romantic about sitting in a theater with other people and sharing this communal experience. But when you have a commentary and a discussion that you want to have about this movie, it's better to just hold on to that, right? And watch these separately and then come together and talk about this, because it's more raw in that sense. So very excited to be a part of it. Very much enjoyed my time so far in this month. I know we have some exciting things lined up. Some potential guests.
Yes.
That we've discussed for next month, next year, rather.
Yeah. I'm really excited for that. My goal right now is, at a minimum, every year that we're covering, is to have at least one guest.
That'd be great.
If we can manage more, fantastic. But I want to kind of find people that relate to a specific film we're covering. So if we can do that, fantastic. Because, you know, the more you learn,
the more you know.
Yes.
We both, for anyone who's not in the room with us, we both did the NBC rainbow, the yeah. more you know.
We just waved like Pocahontas time. At each other. Yeah, it was great.
We did do the Pocahontas wave for sure. Very excited. Very excited for the next steps here too. We're going to be covering the 1930s, the year of 1930, rather.
Yeah. Films nominated that debuted in 1928 and 1929. We're still in one of those weird split year things.
Right.
There were five films nominated next year. One of them is Lost to Time. So we're going to do something a little different and do kind of a lost media episode.
Fantastic.
So just so you have an idea of our schedule, we're going to be covering The Patriot and Lost Media, In Old Arizona, The Broadway Melody, Alibi, and The Hollywood Review. So five films, one ceremony episode. That makes for six episodes next month. So we're going to be doubling up weekly as well. So we'll have our normal Wednesday drops, and then we'll throw in like an extra Friday or a Monday as well.
Perfect.
But yeah, I will look for where to find those films and post on social media so you guys can check it out. Post it on the Patreon so you can follow along there. We'll have a new calendar going up on social media so you can keep track of when we'll be dropping episodes. But really, that's it. We did it, man.
We did it.
We Look made it.
First month down. Hooray. First year down.
Yeah, first year down. Two left of this season, and then we'll be taking a break and coming back in the 1930s. But that's all I've got.
Well, what's interesting is we'll be taking the break. We'll be doing the 1930s. We have a few more years between then. But what I'm very interested in is that we have the 2026 Oscars coming yes. up. So a bit of a change, right? We'll talk about that as we get closer, but with how much the Oscars mean to us individually and together, and how much we love these movies. I'll say this, a nice little teaser tidbit. I think there are some movies that are out now that I'm very interested in talking about with you in the coming months.
Yeah.
So go out and see your movies. I am, of course, alluding to the horror movie Good Boy that will win Best Picture. So go check that out. Go see one battle after another. We're going to be talking about it a lot, whether it wins or not. We will be talking about that a lot in the next couple of months. So,
guys, thank you so much for your support and listening. Can't wait for next year. As always, I'm your host, Kyle.
And I'm Ryan.
And we'll see you at the movies.